Welcome to Cannabis Connection World Podcast, where cannabis connectors meet and discuss the gospel truth of cannabis, the plant connecting the planet.
Hey, cannabis connectors, welcome back to Cannabis Connection World. This is your host, Nicole, and thanks for joining me again. Last episode was the first part of my interview with Senator Harold Jones. This week, we will hear the second half of the interview discussing what we as citizens can do to steer our legislators to pass his declassification bill. We will also speak to Tina, who I mentioned in last week's episode. She is a multiple sclerosis patient living in Atlanta who uses cannabis to manage the symptoms of her disease. So sit back and relax as I give you this good cannabis content rolled up for your consumption.
Cannabis class. Prohibition of cannabis in the United States after 1969.
In this episode of Cannabis Class, we will discuss the history of prohibition of cannabis. After the passing of the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act, the law's ramifications became apparent over the next few decades. Physicians stopped prescribing cannabis as a therapeutic remedy, and in 1942, it was removed from the U.S. pharmacopoeia. American hemp cultivation also ceased. The justice system was making a lot of money by arresting and prosecuting people for possession of the plant. But all of these efforts did not stop its growth in popularity. Despite all of these efforts, as its use continued to grow, pressure mounted on lawmakers to reconsider federal marijuana policy. In 1969, the Supreme Court determined unanimously that the Tax Act was unconstitutional. Then in 1970, the Controlled Substance Act categorized marijuana as a Schedule I prohibited substance, defining it as a drug of abuse with no medical benefits. At the time, the new categorization came with an opportunity. A special federal commission was created to study all aspects of the cannabis plant. After 2 years and millions of dollars, the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse completed its study and determined that it was not the so-called gateway drug to harder drugs like heroin, that its use was not associated with violence or aggressive activity, and that its consumption was not bad to users' health. The commission concluded that neither the marijuana user nor the drug itself can be said to constitute a danger to public safety, end quote. Their recommendation is that the possession of marijuana for personal use no longer should be an offense, and that the casual distribution of small amounts of marijuana should no longer be an offense. The commission's findings and recommendations should have immediately prompted the federal government to review federal marijuana policy and the penalties, but that did not happen. The Nixon administration proceeded to reject the commission's findings and instead chose to embrace cultural and racial stereotypes over facts and evidence, resulting in the first official war on drugs, public enemy number one being cannabis. It fit perfectly with his appeal to people who feared and resented the 1960s rebellions by African Americans, anti-war leftists, hippies, gays, lesbians. I guess he was scared of how strong these groups might become if they found one common goal. Its effects on the nation's weed supply disproved the gateway theory. It showed that the lack of marijuana leads users to try other drugs, not that marijuana leads you to try these drugs. Former Nixon advisor John Richman told journalist Dan Baum in 1994, quote, "We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war on black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did." The annual number of arrests for pot, less than 100,000 in 1968, passed 400,000 by 1973. With penalties in many states, like Alabama and Louisiana, having mandatory minimum sentences of 5 years in prison for possession of one joint. And the maximum in Texas was life. Oregon became the first state to decriminalize marijuana in 1973, reducing the penalty for possession of less than an ounce to a $500 fine. Few other states followed over the next 5 years, including California and New York. Other states tentatively allowed medical marijuana to be used despite the Controlled Substance Act's declaration that cannabis had no valid medical use. Even the federal government established a program to grow it for qualified patients after glaucoma sufferer Robert Randall won a court decision giving him the right to have a supply in 1975. In 1976, a newly elected President Jimmy Carter at one point endorsed decriminalization, but he also supported the spraying of herbicides on marijuana fields in Mexico, terrifying potheads north of the border. Meanwhile, a backlash was developing, and a 1979 survey found 1/9 of high school seniors reported that they got high every day, and use by teenagers as young as 13 was very common. Irate and politically connected parents launched a crusade to ban the sale of drug paraphernalia. And by 1983, more than 25 states and scores of local governments had outlawed most of what was sold in head shops. The election of Ronald Reagan in 1980 started a massive counterattack against liberal policies. Gains made by labor unions, blacks, women, gays, and the overall 1960s counterculture were threatened. And between 1977 and 1992, a conservative revolution took place. It was called the Drug War. The first George Bush's term from 1989 to 1992 was arguably the peak of the drug war. Bush's drug czar, William Bennett, contended that casual drug users were actually worse than hardcore addicts because they showed you could get high without being a strung out mess. But pot arrests actually declined during these years as law enforcement concentrated its paramilitary tactics on crack and on neighborhoods like South Central in Los Angeles. Pot culture was regenerating as the 1990s began, especially in a new genre known as hip hop. There were a few political figures that were bold enough or willing to speak out against the validity of prohibition. One of those figures was Baltimore Mayor Kurt Schmoke. Also, in San Francisco, the AIDS-ravaged gay community was discovering that marijuana helped relieve the disease's symptoms. In 1991, 80% of the city's voters, backed by a ballot initiative, recommended legalizing medical marijuana, and the next year, the city's Board of Supervisors made it the lowest priority for police. The election of Bill Clinton as president in 1992 prompted wishful thinking because he famously admitted that, you know, he used marijuana, but he did not inhale. Whatever his experience was, it didn't translate into any sympathy for pot smokers. He continued to escalate the drug war and fired Surgeon General Jocelyn Elders for her suggesting that the nation should discuss legalization. By 1995, the U.S. had more than 2 million people in prison or jail, and pot arrests hit record highs with more than 500,000 people busted for just simple possession. That's enough for this week's class. We covered a lot. So next week's episode, we will focus more on what happened after the Clinton administration's war on drugs and how Obama and Trump are forming the new conversation about marijuana legalization. Up next, Cannabis Connectors, you will hear part two of my interview with Senator Harold Jones. So since the session, the legislative session starts, what would you recommend us as citizens to start doing? Yes, we will make phone calls. We probably won't be able to reach those senators and legislators because they will be on the Capitol starting tomorrow, in and out of sessions. Can we send emails? Can we send physical letters? Yeah, do we show up at the Capitol?
Emails actually better. Yeah.
Okay.
Email in this day and age is actually better. Oh. Frankly, so when I say call, I really do mean emails. That actually has a better effect. You can choose another receiving it. Even if an admin is just receiving it, it's actually better.
Okay.
But certainly emailing, calling is okay, but yes, emailing would be better. Now, the other thing, when you said, can you show up? Absolutely. Can people do it all the time?
Right.
So, yes, you can show up and try to see the state senator. That's your right. I mean, even if you can't see him or her at that point in time, then just ask to get an appointment. They should go ahead and meet with you. And, you know, when you're doing that, you want to just make sure that you bring out the arguments, number one, from a medicinal standpoint. And then number two, how does the government benefit from charging somebody with a felony, making them lose the right to vote, making them lose their whole scholarship just because they have over an ounce of marijuana, possession only? So one of the kids. We're not talking about driving DUI. We're talking about the only thing that you have is possession only, and you're found with it, and you should have to have a felony where if you're in school, you're kicked out.
Right.
You know, you lose the right to vote for how many years.
Right.
Why? How has the state benefited from it?
Right.
How has the state gained from getting any of those kind of...
Right. And I asked the same question. How does the state benefit from sending the patients outside of the state to receive or to retrieve their medicine? So like we meant, like we talked about earlier, the state of Georgia has legalized 20 fluid ounces. You are legally allowed to possess 20 fluid ounces of a low THC, high CBD oil, but you have no way of getting it inside the state that you live in. So you're forced to leave the state to go to a nearby state like Florida that provides the medicine and get it. And when you cross state lines, you become a criminal. Because federally, you're still breaking the law. And if you get caught with it, you have to go through the process of proving, okay, yes, I have a card. Who's going to pay for that time that you have to go to jail because you're caught with this liquid from a plant that you're taking as medicine? I mean, it's beyond ridiculous that there isn't a system that, yes, the legislators decided that only certain people can have possession of a certain amount of this oil, but they're not providing safe access to it.
Right, exactly.
So another question that I have for you is, what are your thoughts on the declassification ordinances that already exist in Atlanta that just did it last year in October? And then Savannah is considering also a similar declassification ordinance. Do you see that maybe happening or coming up for vote in city council in your district?
I don't see it happening in my district. I don't think that's – we've brought it up too, but I'm not sure – if it's actually going to be able to go forward, because that's why you need state law. Because even though I'm the one pushing it, persons in the district kind of still hold on to those same standard trope arguments that are used about being a gateway drug and all these other foolishness. So really, that's why you really need a statewide law to be uniform, really for persons to be able to follow. Because as you go from these different counties and you have these different laws, that's going to be very important for people to have a standard that they know actually fits. And as you have these different laws in different counties, that can cause a lot of deleterious things to take place, because in your county, the fine, you may not have any jail time that may be presented, and then the fine will go to $75. When you go to somebody else's county, you get caught, it could actually be jail time, but even more importantly, it could be a higher fine, and also then you're placed on probation and all the problems that also presents.
Exactly.
So we certainly need to be more uniform.
I agree. I think the state bill is what is needed. And then let me ask you this. What is the next step if it goes up for vote and it doesn't happen? I mean, do we just continue to berate our district attorneys and our senators with creating or letting it go through another committee to get voted on? Will we be able to get that information from you after the fact, just to kind of make sure that we're staying on task with what we need to do as citizens to make sure that if it doesn't happen this time, that we make sure that it's up for vote again in the next session?
Yeah, and you actually need to add someone else to that. You need to add the judges, local judges too. You need to get on them also. I forgot about that. Because here's what's taking place. Some of the senators very well may want to vote for it. Okay, we know we went through Judiciary Committee, so we know that at least the Georgia Senate seems to be a little bit more open-minded to the issue, okay? Mm-hmm. But what happens is some senators may want to vote for it. They get pressure from judges or from the DAs, things of that nature. Oh, you can't vote for it. Don't do it. So there needs to be, and no one knows that actually is taking place. But that's where a lot of pressure needs to go to, because they're the ones who are actually enforcing these laws and things that and getting the judges. They're the ones who are doing it in practicality with the judge's DA solicitor. So I need to include them in there too, where they have pressure put on them to say, why should a person have to have a felony? That's the question. No one's talking about giving it to kids. No one's talking about driving and smoking, because we already have laws in the book against that. Tell me, why do I have to have a felony? Why do I have to have my right to vote to be lost if I'm caught with marijuana open?
Right.
No one can come up with a good answer to that.
Right.
But see, a lot of times, but right now, it's all on the legislature. That's the only person who's receiving any pressure. And everybody else who's against it and actually helping to kind of oppress persons on that level, they're not, there's no accountability on them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just sit back and say, well, it's the legislature. And the legislature says, it's really a civil rights issue, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
The whole drug war that's taking place was completely unnecessary. How do we know that the drug war was completely unnecessary? Because of the debate that we have between opiates and other things.
That's
because
right.
Now everybody is saying the key is rehab and rehabilitation, not jail. Well, that was known 30 years ago when the drug war first started.
That's
persons
right.
were trying to say that then, but they were drowned out.
That's
the
right.
whole thing was completely unnecessary. We destroyed all these people's lives for something that did not have to be done, but yet it was. And it's time to move forward. It's time to approach these things in a real progressive manner. And I really think that persons should not take no for an answer. And yet, whether it goes through this year or not, we just have to keep going back and going back and going back, because it truly is one of those new civil rights issues that's here. And the great thing about this civil rights issue, nobody can say it affects one race or one gender. It affects everybody.
Children.
All should be involved in it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that in the last 30 to 40 years, we've come a long way. Now that 45% of states have some sort of legalization or medicinal marijuana legislation on their books, obviously the majority of people in America and the United States feel that this plant should be take a second look at, and we really need to have the means to research it and determine exactly what it does, exactly what it does not do, and then use it accordingly. So I totally agree that it is a civil rights issue. So I know that coming up for vote in this session that starts tomorrow also is a medical marijuana legislation bill, as well as hemp cultivation. Is that correct? Are those being voted
right.
on
those,
in this next
those,
session?
I know those are going to be coming up. And, yeah, those will also be coming up. Once again, trying to extend the medical marijuana to different illnesses, or even maybe trying to reduce the amount that you can have. And hemp legislation is also coming up. That's a very good point, without a doubt. That will also, from my understanding. Now, from my understanding, those are both House bills. And so they'll be coming up in the House, and then they pass in the Senate. But once again, persons ought to be very active, especially in hemp legislation, too. Be very active and try to make sure that you're
right. And doing the same thing. I guess that is
right.
contacting
Absolutely.
Your district attorneys, your judges,
mm-hmm.
your senator, your House representative,
right.
and letting them know how you feel about this issue. Okay. So understanding how big of a part the new governor will play into moving the state forward in the green industry, have you spoken to any of the governor candidates about the position on this matter? Or, you know, do you know... Have any of them been vocal, as you're aware?
I'm not aware. I think most said that they would take a look at these particular issues. You know, it's very hard on something that's kind of controversial to get a firm stand on it. But I think that should be an issue that persons kind of push and say, hey, where do you stand on this particular issue, just like you've been doing any other particular issue. But yeah, whoever becomes governor, that would be huge as far as these issues are concerned. So we're talking about recreational, medicinal, hemp industry. Whoever governor can help set that tone. So that would be a huge decision for people to make, and I think that ought to be one issue that persons have to ask about, because it's something that can affect people across the board in any particular time. So it can cut across gender lines, class lines, race lines. So it is one of those issues that certainly people are to try to push and see where the candidates stand on, just like you would do with any.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's our goal here at Cannabis Connection World, is to bring awareness and bring light to who is saying what and who stands for what when it comes to this particular issue, this industry. We really don't want to be pushed into another 4 years with one governor saying the same thing. They don't think that it can be regulated, because we know that that's not true. If 29 other states in this United States of America have figured out how to regulate it, then obviously there is a way. And so we just want to make sure we bring light to an awareness to the citizens of who is for this legislation to pass, because you as a senator can do your part to write the bill and try to push to get it pushed, you know, passed through your legislators, through other senators or through the Senate. But if it reaches the governor's desk after the Senate approves it, the governor still has the power to veto it. And so we need to make sure that we have that right person in the Capitol coming next year that will support this agenda.
Right, exactly. So I think, and not only as the governor, even down the line, a person of any contested election, it is going to be important to make this an issue. I can't stress that enough.
Right. I know that there is a rally coming up on the Capitol on February 1st. That's where we have several of our advocacy groups coming together, the ACLU and Normal and One Plant, a bunch of different organizations that have been supporting and fighting for reasonable legislation, marijuana legislation here in the state. And so, you know, we would love to invite you to come to the Capitol or join us at the Capitol on that day for our rally, just so that we can hear what you've been doing and how you feel that at least declassification or a reasonable punishment for possession of the plant should be changed statewide. And we'd love to invite you to come down and talk to our people about that.
Great. Sounds good. I'd love to be there. Absolutely.
Okay, great. I'll make sure to get you that information so you could join us. So can you just, as we wrap up, can you just tell us how we can keep up with what is going on in the Senate, what you're doing, how the bill is doing with this particular bill that you proposed and authored? Can you just let our listeners know how they can follow you? What is the best way to sign up for your email, newsletter, or whatever?
You got Facebook, which is Elect Harold Jones, and then Twitter is at Senator Harold Jones. And then if you email me at haroldjoneslawoffice@gmail.com, I can then make you part of the email list as far as for newsletters and things of that nature. Absolutely.
Okay, great. All right. And we just thank you again, Senator Jones, for all your efforts regarding this issue. It is a big deal. We need some reasonable legislation concerning possession of the plant and the use of the plant, especially for people medicinally, but just having access to it. And so we just appreciate everything that you've done and that you continue to do. And is there any other information you'd like to let our listeners know that might be helpful to helping you with this fight?
Well, you can also go to Georgia State Senate. If you could just put in Georgia State Senate,
okay,
then you get a list of all your state senators. There you get the email addresses, phone numbers, really email addresses. That's the way to contact in this day and age. And find out who your senator is, where you can email them. But even more important, it's just email. Ask him to come and sit down with him and talk about the issue. Because I think it's an issue that all the persons who want to change these laws, they're on the right side of history, but you have to make sure the person understands, the person realizes there's support out there for it.
Okay, great. So Georgia State Senate, is that what you said?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. GeorgiaStateSenate.gov? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's .gov, yeah.
Okay.
But as soon as you put it in, it's going to
pop up. All right. Yeah, so thank you again, Senator Jones. And we look forward to seeing you in about a month down at the Capitol.
Absolutely.
For our rally.
I look forward to being there, no doubt. Yes, I will be there.
Great. Well, thanks again, Senator Jones, and we appreciate you. Thank you for the vital information, and you have a great start off to your kickoff to your session. We are wishing you luck, and we will try to be the wind beneath your wings as much as we can.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Jones, thank you so much.
Thank you.
On today's Cannabis Chronicles, we speak with Tina, whom I mentioned in the last episode during my interview with Senator Jones. She is a multiple sclerosis patient that was arrested for using cannabis to help manage the symptoms of her disease.
So my name is Tina. I'm 33 years old. I've been in Georgia for 12 years. I've been consuming marijuana somehow, some way. And for about 18 years now, it's the only medicine that's basically worked for treating my symptoms with multiple sclerosis. Originally, I was introduced to the, smoking weed as a teenager. Basically, I was treating the depression and PTSD of my childhood. Years later, come to find out, I was medically treating the effects of MS that took over my body. Multiple sclerosis is an autoimmune disease. For those of you who don't know, it's actually where your own immune system's attacking the central nervous system in your brain and spine, which means that after gnawing away at your nerves, it can result into permanent nerve damage. So if your brain is telling your leg to move, the connection is lost and you will not get the message, so your leg will not move. It's been 7 years now of trial and error. throughout treatment, as well as different doctors. Sometimes the side effects of different medications are actually worse than the actual disabilities of daily life of MS, living with it. So over the years, I've actually benefited more with the whole using marijuana medicinally. And it's actually had so much more benefit than any other medicine that I've done, that I've taken or tried, that the doctors, and the doctors definitely, they look at my CAT scans and MRIs, and they're just amazed that how I look physically is so much better than their patients that are not using the marijuana. They're actually using the different treatments that I tried in the past, and they're like in wheelchairs, can't move their legs, you know, trembling all the time, and speech impaired, and you know, the list goes on. But as far as the, how many lesions that they see on my brain and spine compared to the same, you know, the other patients with the same amount of lesions on their brain, they're just amazed at how great it's doing. They're like, oh, just keep doing what you're doing. At the end of the day, all I'm doing is waking up every day, exercising, eating healthy, and when I do have problems with, you know, the blindness in my eye or my leg going numb or, you know, different pains and nauseousness, I consume weed, whether it's either through a tea or, you know, a cookie or actually smoking it. I've learned with trial and error with that as well. Marijuana, there's different effects. So, you know, sometimes actually smoking it, that's going to give you the right away, right off the bat kind of sedative type of, you know, high type of intoxication feeling. Whereas if I eat it and it goes through my bloodstream, that actually does so much more and it benefits me more. It actually lasts longer throughout the day. My body, the pain's gone and my body's full of energy way longer, 8 to 12 hours versus if I smoke it, it's just like an hour or two, you know. So, and I feel the difference between the two. You know, a lot of times people shun down on the whole using cannabis because they've been taught, the system has taught us and tried to convince us that what's good for us is bad and what's bad for us is good. And in reality, we can only do our own research and we can only take in what we want to take in physically, mentally, and emotionally. So I just encourage everyone to do their own research and figure out what it is that you are trying to treat yourself with and how, you know, the different pros and cons and different consumptions of it, because it's not just smoking weed. There's so many different to treat things. You know, another thing with the multiple sclerosis, over the years I've challenged, I've been challenged with, you know, they make a big deal about your support system when you're going through these emotional times, and your support system, and that's very important. You need to have people, your family and friends have to be supportive of you. That's actually something that I've struggled years ago in the beginning. A lot of my family and my so-called support system was, you know, looking down on me and didn't approve. And then at one point, I was married, and my own husband did not approve of me smoking marijuana, and he looked down on it. And so that took me to a dark place, because of course I go the route of, you know, not doing it, even though it's helping me physically. I stopped doing it because my support system, that's what's important, according to the doctors. So I try his route and go that route with the whole everything legal and all the medications, and it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And you know, mentally and emotionally and physically, like I was just deteriorating because my support system did not support me. And the good, they didn't see good in the marijuana. They just seen the word legal and illegal, and they scared away from it. And so they looked down on me at it. So I just deteriorated physically. I was doing really bad for a while because I walked away from the cannabis oil and treating my symptoms. But over the years, you know, I said, screw it, I need a better support system. So I became my own support system, and I just went further researching things and treating myself, and nothing natural comes into my body now, and I'm doing amazing, and I'm very excited and determined to bring more awareness to Georgia and to all the different people battling the different diseases and different things throughout the life. I mean, maybe it's not disease, maybe it's simple nauseousness or simple, you know, insomnia or anxiety or cancerous tumors. It actually cures cancerous tumors. I mean, I've met people with Parkinson's, and they start doing smoking, you know, I gave them brownie and all of a sudden he stopped trembling, you know. I have met people with all kinds of different diseases that it's cured, and I'm just very excited just to bring more awareness to everyone. Also, the challenges facing with multiple sclerosis and using cannabis, it's in Georgia, it's not legal. So, of course, I'm forced to, you know, go ahead and call people and go out and get it. But at that same time, you know, I'm looked down upon as a criminal because I'm buying drugs. And it's not drugs. That's the thing. It's plants that was grown from the ground, and it has these amazing ingredients that are actually doing something. But everyone has it where you're a criminal. You know, what's wrong about it when I'm going blind in my eye and it's actually bringing my eyesight back? You know, and this past summer, I actually, you know, when I had that going on, I went and I drove down the street to get something, and I got pulled over for no apparent reason. I asked him why. There was no reason, of course, and he searched my car, and there was, I would say, 2 blunts worth, what is that, 2 grams, maybe a gram or two worth of marijuana, and they locked me up and threw away the key, and, you know, now I have this record, and, you know, and I'm a mother, and I do my best to, you know, just be energetic and treat myself and my disease and everything the best way I can physically, so that I can be the best mom I can be. And it's just hard because everyone has this, you know, the system has it set up where we're looked down upon. And so mentally, emotionally, it's just you're taking on so much more, as well as the whole, you know, illegal thing, of course, you know, but also it's that, you know, looking down upon your own family, you know, strangers, everyone, because it's supposed to be this bad thing. But yet this is the only thing that there's no reports of, no death, no overdose, no, I mean, the worst thing you do, you munch out and eat all your fucking food. I mean, that's the bad part, you know, you're eating chips instead of apples, you know, but hey, if you don't buy chips, they won't be in your body. So, you know, I'm sitting in the damn jail cell with these fucking crackheads shaking around, and I'm like, all I got is my 3 kids in my head, and I'm like, oh, really? Just because I had a fucking smoke of damn joint to get my eyesight back? It was traumatic.
Thanks for joining me for episode 2 of Cannabis Connection World. In the next episode, we will talk with attorney Cheryl Murray Powell and Roz McCarthy. Both ladies are from Minorities for Medical Marijuana, a nonprofit organization, and we will get their view on what Jeff Sessions' actions actually have on the cannabis industry. And our Cannabis Chronicles will be with Miss Ebony Knight, Normal Women's Alliance National Director. So tune in. If you have any questions about what was discussed in today's show, or if you have any suggestions for topics you would like to hear, please email me. I'd love to hear from you at info@cannabisconnectionworld.com. That's info@cannabisconnectionworld.com. Here at Cannabis Connection World, we are on a mission to show you how cannabis connects the world. I strongly believe that if you know the facts, you can share the knowledge. The cannabis movement is strong in numbers, and that is how you change policy. We don't want this industry to look like Silicon Valley, where only one part of the population is really represented. Having a seat at the table is very important, and I can't do it alone, so I need your help, fellow cannabis connectors, to spread the gospel truth about cannabis. Join me for the next episode of Cannabis Connection World. But until then, you can follow me on Instagram at Cannabis Connection Podcast, on Facebook as Mary Jane Connectors, or on Twitter at CannaCon World. That's CannaConN World. Love, peace, and happy connecting.